Are you ready for us?
We're ready, if you're ready.
Hi, I'm Sierra Kander with the Sodiomi Resource Conservation District.
And Don McInhill with Russian River Keeper.
And we appreciate the opportunity to give an update on the Russian River First Flush project. So first off, defining what Russian River First Flush is. It is a term used to describe the stormwater runoff that flows into creeks after the first significant storm of the season. It's a landscape rinse. And the goal of the first flush monitoring is to be able to capture some data and to go out and monitor during that first flush. So a brief history of Russian River First Flush. It began in 2002. It was initiated by Revital Katznelson through the State Board Citizen Monitoring Program, and it is continued annually since 2002, with the exception of 2006. In 2007, it went through a pretty radical overhaul, and we'll talk a little bit about that. The sampling design changed quite a bit. But again, the main goal of this is to educate, engage, and empower citizen monitors to take a look at their own creeks and to collect data and then inform their own decision-making and their own management based on data that they have collected and been involved in.
Okay. Our sampling design for First Flush is informed by a quality assurance project plan, which was developed in 2005 with some funding we had from the state board. And over time, we started out initially doing volunteers, working with Revital and other people actually in the Region 1 lab here in the back of this office, and actually did our own analysis. And after a period of time, nutrients and total suspended solids and some of the other things, we determined that there was just too much source of error to be introduced, or that was potentially going to be introduced, and now are working with all state and EPA certified labs as far as our water quality analysis. Just the quickest synopsis, we basically recruit people through the summer, assuming we've got funding and we can start up then. Get volunteers engaged, train, and then we set up a phone tree, and basically we sit around like very anxious people waiting for that first rain. Some years have mobilized up to 100 people, and there's nothing like telling 100 people they got to go out at night on a Friday and go sample rain, and they've changed their plans and then it doesn't rain. But generally, when it does rain, we mobilize our teams out there. They have already been equipped, trained, they collect the samples, and then they come into an event center and drop off all their samples. Sierra and I and other coordinators sort through the samples and do make sure that they've completely filled out their quality assurance data sheets, that they've properly labeled their samples. We do a very rigorous QAQC upon sample receipt, and then we prepare it and get it into coolers and onto the labs. And so that is our, and the toughest thing is just lack of funding, trying to get from the point where we've collected all this data, we've got reports from the lab, and producing a report like you have before you. In order to do this project with very, very little funding, in fact, I don't think we had hardly any funding the first couple of years, it requires a large cooperation and collaboration with multiple entities. One of the original partners was the State Water Resources Control Board, and this regional board, the North Coast Regional Board, has been instrumental in making this happen, not only by providing use of their lab, but also through staff who are quite experienced and help inform the process. We also have local government, other regulatory agencies. We enjoy extensive collaboration with the US EPA Office of Water and also the Richmond Field Station Laboratory. But the biggest component of this, where we get an incredible bang for the buck, if this study was done by a private firm using all hired people, you would be talking about probably a six-figure study. With all the citizen volunteers that we get out there, this is a feasible study. And the big thing we get out of bringing those volunteers out is achieving our goal, which CR mentioned, which is engaging and empowering the citizens. And we're training dozens of little watershed stewards. You can't help but go through our training program and learn about the impact of stormwater. Go ahead with the next. And this is just a quick map to show you one thing we're very proud of. We initially started out basically determining our stations by having groups of three and four people show up from a neighborhood and say, I got a creek in my backyard. I'd like to know what's going on there. And we have morphed from that. We learned that in the rural areas like Dutchville Creek out in West County, Atascadero Creek, which has been mentioned previously in the 303D process, act very different than our urban landscape. And we had a real problem in that the urban areas would flush with a quarter inch of rain within minutes. And we'd get a quarter inch of rain out in Occidental and not much would happen. Usually it'd take three, four, five storms to get those areas running. So we have since, in 2007, really focused in on the urban areas. And you can see from the map, the town of Windsor isn't marked here because the team we sent out there missed the flow and the flush. But we are generally in every urban area, including the city of Ukiah, which isn't shown on this map. So we have a very good area of coverage. And the real big deal about our effort, as opposed to other, say, municipal stormwater sampling efforts, is we are doing the entire watershed in the same storm at the same time. So we get a very robust data set from a large area, even though it's individual data points.
The only other sampling design thing I wanted to add is that we also in 2007 switched to having a paired outfall and stream location. In the early data sets from 2002 to 2005, we just had a stream location. And since we really wanted to move this towards an urban analysis and evaluating the stormwater piece, we have a paired outfall and creek location wherever that is available. In some of the locations, we don't have a creek location because either there isn't surface flow or it's not feasible to have those paired. So there's a couple locations as we get into this data.
And that one right there is a classic example. That's a 54-inch outfall right by the fire station in Hillsburg with Foss Creek in the foreground. So we're sampling the stream and the outfall. We can certainly do a better job interpreting what that outfall's doing to the creek water quality.
So we're going to discuss a little bit about the results from the 2007 and 2008 sampling efforts. And first, just wanted to give a quick overview that these are water quality objectives and water quality goals that we've gotten from several different sources. Where there is an objective, we've used that and have used guidelines in other cases. These will be represented on the graphs as well if there's a standard light established. So this gives you an idea. One thing that in 2007 that we were very fortunate is that we were able to do a baseline or a pre-event sample. This is something that we want to integrate into all of the future samplings and making a real goal for being able to integrate. What this allowed us to do was it was kind of a happy accident that the Worldwide Monitoring Day event that we had occurred the morning of first flush, so it was actually incredibly well paired. And we were able to go out and on selected creeks that were part of this Worldwide Monitoring Day event and that had surface flow prior to the rains, we were able to collect some pre-event samples. And that's really been a hugely valuable tool for us, again, to be able to take a look at the impacts of stormwater rather than necessarily knowing whether or not we were seeing changes in those conditions. So this is one example from 2007. And this, again, we do depict a line here showing that we have a standard that we're comparing to. And the red are the pre-samples in locations. So not every location had a pre-sample, but and we should show that there's non-detects on some of those locations where there were pre-samples. But in those areas, you can actually see one of the things that came up was that sometimes the precondition, the baseline, the base flow prior to the stormwater input was actually had higher pollutant levels than the stormwater actually diluted that. So this is really helpful information for us to be able to take a look at evaluating this and understanding more, again, on the community basis for folks to understand their watersheds and understand their stream systems, for them to be aware of some of the more critical times for them to look at their own management. So here, again, is a suspended solid. This is just another example of some of the data that's generated. This, by the way, you guys do have these out. I think you've seen our 2007 reports, and the 2008 report is in draft. So here's total suspended solids. Again, just gives some information, especially to take a look at the areas where you may have different sources of suspended solids, whether or not it's a late season algae bloom, and you're taking a look at different types of suspended solids that you may see evidence of in base flow versus your stormwater inputs. Okay, and then for the, this is, again, indicator bacteria, a popular topic for today. And this shows, you know, that we are seeing pretty much across the board a lot of problems or exceedances in our goal that we have for indicator bacteria. But one of the nice things about the 2007 data is we were actually able to show that these were coming in with stormwater, that we were seeing an increase in this being mobilized through the rinsing of the landscape, which, again, gives us tools that we can feed back into the community to take a look at the management and understand that this is something that is being input through our landscape.
Yeah, and just to add, we're not collecting this data specifically for TMDLs, although originally in 2002, 2003, that was certainly what it was used for. But looking at this data, you can see that our base flow, the red dots, most of those are actually over 235 colonies per milliliter. So it isn't great, but what this is telling us and what might be helpful in the context of a TMDL assessment is that stormwater is a huge source of bacteria. We see these small, very short red bars that are showing relatively low levels. And then what we're seeing at the top end is we are actually bumping up to the analytical ceiling. In past years, we've actually diluted our sample diluted our samples in order to achieve a higher reporting limit and actually got ourselves up to, I think, 52,000 colonies or 48. But we found that we were even bumping up against that ceiling. So certainly this tells us, you know, in someone doing a bacterial assessment, that our urban landscape is a huge, huge source of bacteria to our urban creeks where we see a fair amount of impairment.
Another quick point is that what we've analyzed for here, we've selected as best we can for common pollutants that we would be looking for in stormwater, but this is also really dictated by the lab donation. All of the analysis that we have is entirely donated, so we go through a number of different labs and we beg, borrow, and steal as best we can, but this is by no means a comprehensive list of potential pollutants. They're the ones that we're able to get donated for this process.
And this is our data for 2008, and you can see we post the range of the results. For some things like temperature, we can actually see that we're doing quite well. And then in other areas like total suspended solids, we can see there's certainly some of the range is well within, that's actually an industrial stormwater standard or objective. But then we see some exceedances upward of 1,100, so quite a range. We are seeing some numbers that are within standards or goals or objectives. And this is our nitrate. And one thing we also see, and if you look back at the 2007 nitrate graph, is that stormwater pollutants are equal opportunity. They don't hit the same area over and over. We do see some stations with continual elevated levels. But I think in the previous year, we had higher nitrate levels in Foss Creek and Hillsburg and in Laguna Cotati Channel down in Cotati. And this year, it happened to be Colgan Creek, which both the receiving water, the stream, and the outfall were giving us elevated levels much higher than the other locations sampled. And for ammonia nitrogen, this is something that over time we this is something that's been more and more consistent, is that first flush also is a big producer of ammonia nitrogen. This is, I believe, a fish and game screening level of 0.5 milligram per liter. But certainly we see a lot of exceedances, and certainly it's the one NH4 species of ammonia that we're really worried about that's highly toxic. But this tells us what the total ammonia loads are. And based on those numbers, 25% of that's going to be the more toxic variety in general. And so we've got some issues with toxicity in first flush here. And one other thing, which we actually started doing medals. Medals is relatively expensive, but because of the generosity and the cooperation of the city of Santa Rosa, we've been analyzing medals for, I think, 4 years now. And last year we went to a different lab because of budget issues in Santa Rosa. But you can see things like lead. We thought that we got that out of gasoline. And yet downtown Guerneville, in a very small urban area, we're seeing astronomic numbers of lead. So most of the metal pollutants we find are associated with vehicles and vehicle emissions. Certainly have problems with a variety of things, things that we thought we had dealt with, like lead. And it's yours.
So again, since the goal of this really is engaging communities, empowering communities, educating them about their watersheds and getting this information to feed back into their management and their treatment and awareness of how they manage their properties, we have some best management practices that we recommend, really try to make these things that are within people's ability to manage really easily, and just bring these to their awareness. Again, not a comprehensive list, but trying to build bridges back from some of the information that we saw to some best management practices that can be relatively easily and cheaply employed by folks. Really just some rules of thumb. And this is building on a lot of the outreach that's being done by the municipalities through their stormwater control, and really being able to bridge this back to folks who have seen firsthand what it looks like coming out of a stormwater outlet and into a creek, and being able to show that the cumulative impact of these management practices really allow them to be part of the solution and allow them to have impact on being able to improve that stormwater and to improve the habitat and what it yields down in the creek.
And unfortunately, our file format for two of our pictures did not like the regional board's computer, but the one picture on the left is actually a dirt path next to a lawn area that's being over-irrigated, and you can clearly see it's just dragging the sediment right into the gutter where it's going to sit until the first rains of fall and get driven into the creek. The other two pictures were basically a front yard that was a mounded landscape, which a homeowner in Santa Rosa basically excavated out a low spot and created a rain garden so that all the roof runoff from his house went in, or their house went into this rain garden, and the majority of it was infiltrated. So each one of us plays a part. Stormwater isn't generated by one entity. Every single one of us have a stormwater footprint, so every single one of us needs to be part of the solution. And certainly our goal here at the end of First Flush is to empower people with, these are ways we can get rid of pollutant XYZ if we all do this, or minimize them, certainly.
So just here's a continuation of some of the best management practices that are recommended. Additionally, looking at water conservation and water use, understanding that a lot of the summer water sources in urban areas are irrigation runoff, and that some of the base flow and summer flow can also be impacted by management. And then looking for, again, small-scale, really implementable ways for people to manage their own properties.
And the one picture that didn't show up is pick up after your pet kind of graphic. And on the far right was actually a graphic of a product called BioDry, which is a waterless way to clean up oil stains from pavement. I can't tell you how many times I see people with pressure washers cleaning the oil off the pavement. Well, guess where it goes. So that was actually a really good idea, and it's actually very affordable and available at Home Depot here.
And from the education standpoint, a lot of people do have to guess where that goes because they don't necessarily understand the connection of storm drains and creeks, and that's one of the other really amazing parts of being able to get people into the creeks, is so that they can see that direct conduit from their lawns and from their curbs right into a creek.
One of the management techniques, I mean, this is the problem. All the VMPs we focused on were all about source control. And the reason they're all about source control, not treatment, is because our urban landscape looks like this. Raindrop falls on the roof of this building, goes out a roof drain into the parking lot, picks up some oil, goes into the storm drain, and it's in the creek half a block down, within a matter of minutes with all those pollutants. So source control is important given our existing infrastructure. And if you want to, the next slide shows really where a lot of the country's going. In the state of Connecticut, you cannot build any size building without demonstrating through the planning process that you have created, you know, any changes, modifications to your building site have to result in zero increase in pollutant loads or stormwater runoff. Because the other thing that urban landscape does is it speeds up the water. We get these incredible peak flows which lead to urban flooding, but more importantly, erosion in the channel. Urban creeks are already heavily impacted. Anything we can do to slow the water down and reduce that erosion preserves any habitat we have in urban areas. Low-impact development is something I'm sure you've heard of in your work on the board. And certainly, in a few words, it is using landscaping to receive stormwater from parking lots, from rooftops, what have you, and basically infiltrate those. And also, if you have the right plants, the microbes in the soil are very efficient at breaking down hydrocarbons and attenuating metals, taking up nutrients and things. And reducing peak flows. And you can see the two slides on the end are both retrofits, very relatively inexpensive retrofits. And it should be noted that this is, you know, going with low-impact development at the beginning of a project is actually far less expensive than concrete pipes and trenching underground a parking lot. It ends up in almost, drastically different O&M over time. The other thing is you avoid the costs and the O&M expense of separators and storm drain filters, and these look a lot nicer, I think. Ready for the next one? So we're always looking to improve our event, and one of the big things that Sierra said is probably our biggest goal, if we could add one thing to First Flush, would be getting some funding or analytical capability to go out and get that base flow data so that when we collect stormwater data, we have something to compare to. What was it like before this outfall just started gushing bubbles out in the first rainstorm? Also, the other thing we'd like to do is take our data points, our sampling stations, and link them back to a calculation of the size of the drainage area and a description of the land use so that we can, again, better interpret the data. And also, we have data from 2002 to 2008 that we would love to compile in a single report and document trends. The other thing we'd like to do is add potential stations around areas where we had particularly acute problems, like, say, Fife Creek and Guerneville, where we traditionally have incredible metals numbers or relatively higher than, well, not relatively, dramatically higher than everywhere else in the watershed, typically, to be able to drill down a little more, add a few more sampling stations, and see if we can learn a little bit more about what's going on. The other biggest part, which is the whole point of First Flush, is to really increase our community engagement, to be able to have a video crew follow us around and post it on YouTube what we're doing. I think everyone's safe and snug in their bed in that first rain of the fall has no idea that the rain is causing these 4-foot-high mounds of bubbles and foam and weird stuff like that and turning the water from clear to tea-colored in a matter of minutes. I think if people were aware of that, that little button on the storm drain that says, you know, drains to creek, don't dump, would all of a sudden illuminate a lot more thought in their heads. And I will let Sierra take the lead.
One of the kind of unfortunate casualties of having to scale this back, both due to the lack of time planning, the last few years that we've been funded in both 2007 and 2008 has come at the last minute. Basically, we've gotten the funding in about September, so our ability to really move forward and do this has reduced the community involvement. We haven't had the training time and the lead time to be able to do that, so that's really the first priority for us, to be able to try to enlarge the community involvement and education component, which the baseline, we really see the baseline as an opportunity for that, because we aren't often able to involve young people in schools and educational programs in First Flush, because it generally happens in the middle of the night, and it's difficult to engage underage folks in that, and we'd really like to be able to bring schools and bring other folks into. We get a lot of requests from teachers and from environmental programs that have a lot of interest in being involved in this program, and we'd like to be able to use the pre-flush or that baseline sampling event to be able to leverage some of that. So this just outlines some of our future resource needs. Generally, what the small seed funding that we've gotten for doing first flush has either come through cooperative agreements or other programmatic funding that Don or I have had. And we're actually trying to fund First Flush now as an ongoing program so that we're not every September trying to cobble together an event at the last minute, but are actually able to take a look at this and how to refine the program and how to build upon it on an annual basis. So this funding goes into the staff time for the organization, all the equipment, preparation, calibration, all of the sampling that occurs, all of the training that occurs, and then on the back end of that, the data analysis, report production, dissemination of that information back into the communities. And then we're also, everything that we get through our data analysis, all of that is entirely donated. So we have to do the coordination to be able to bring all that lab information back in. So we currently have a set proposal before the regional board, and this, again, is relatively bare bones, but we're looking at trying to do this, again, as a program. So even though we're asking for a single year of funding, we're looking at this as a multiple-year program and trying to have it viewed as such. And we continue to apply for funding through a variety of different sources, which, as has come up today, is not necessarily easy to come by. The other component of this that Don and I made a very clear note of is that we think that we're at least 3-to-1 maximizing any of the requested funds that we bring into this program through the volunteer time, the laboratory analysis. We need to get some hard numbers on that to be able to show how much of that funding is maximized through the involvement. And obviously the changes in the awareness and the education is difficult to quantify, but is the end goal.
And I think with that, we'd love to answer any questions you have and really appreciate your time and hearing about our project.
Okay. Any board member questions?
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Norton.
I actually... I'm one of the ones in private industry that actually do first flush as well. I'm a consultant on the other 29 days of the month, and I actually commend you for rallying and getting people involved and providing an education at the same time. I actually looked back at the data to see if I caught this storm, and I did. I've been doing this for about 8 years. My wife thinks I'm absolutely nuts, but I sampled it because the storm was at 1:45 in the morning. I don't know if it was a Friday. It could have been. It never seems to go off in the day. So to go out in a rainstorm on creeks that are out and about in the rural county, I commend you from that standpoint. A couple comments. There is a lot of data out there. At least I know I see Mona here from the standpoint that the MS4 permit, which has been in existence for quite a long time with the City of Santa Rosa, the Water Agency, and I'm sure and Sonoma County, City of Santa Rosa does a lot of static bioassay toxicity type analysis. We're doing just generally the wet cam. But I would encourage you to also look at that data. I looked at the data as you were presenting, and the data that I have, which is public, by the way, generally falls in line with the numbers that you are seeing. Couple comments, too, that we have the bacteriological numbers that we've seen on Santa Rosa Creek, anyway, have been on the order of 1.3 million MPN per 100 mils. So that requires a 7x dilution is where we've had to go to get that number and quantify it. That's been pretty consistent, both upgrading and downgrading. There's been some huge BACT numbers out there. As far as that goes, too, just some questions. Criteria, you're using what criteria to sample? Is it based on a rise in creek level? Is it based on a certain amount of rain in a certain amount of time? How do you go about that?
We basically, when we call the flush, we're basically, at that point, we know rain's on the ground, we know the gutters are starting to flow, and the general rule of thumb is hopefully we have had enough funding and time to be able to get the equipment to the individual teams, and they've gone out and sampled the base flow for conductivity. Generally, the end of the summer conductivity is quite high in any base flow that exists, And so what we look for is a drop in conductivity, a significant drop. And off the top of my head, I can't remember the percent.
Oh, and a rise in stage. Yep. So obviously having some recon of that station, having gone up, whether or not there's base flow, they're absent and now it's present, or actually using some sort of device to look at an increase in stage. We do also have storm criteria that it needs to be. I think it was 0.2 inches, but we bumped it up.
Yeah, we moved up to almost half an inch just because we're covering such a large spatial area. You know, those smaller storms can just get little regions and not soak the whole watershed.
Yeah, the MS4 permit, just so you know, this is 0.3 inches in 3 hours, preceded by 72 hours of dry. The thing is, I have found the same as you, in that your urban areas are quite flashy. You'll see a rise, you'll see stage, and you'll see that in the rural areas, it's very difficult after 0.3 inches of rain to get any kind of rise at all. You just have to go through the time to get it to saturate and run.
The other sample criteria is floatable trash, the parade of cigarette butts. That always tells you you're getting stuff from the streets at that point.
And it's important to also note that we do get different flushes over different portions of the watershed. Like Ukiah did their first flush during the same storm. The reason that it spans 2 days is that there are different times that are sampled. So Ukiah was out, I think, at about 4:30 sampling because the storm was coming through that area.
Yeah, it's geographic, too.
Yeah.
Can I ask, too, you publish this. Where do you publish your report? Does it come to regional board? Okay.
Absolutely, yeah. we have no budget for being able to disseminate this, so we widely use listservs and established email pathways, and we distribute it as best we can. We also do press releases that we put out to all of the local papers. And again, the real goal of this is to bring this back into the community. So if there are any kind of community groups or any abilities, we're going to be speaking to the Cotati Creek Critters and going back into those areas where they've asked for that information to be presented.
Yeah, and websites also. We hang it up on our websites,
yeah.
and that way people can access it. We can direct people there, and they can easily get a copy.
Can I make a quick comment, too? This is Mona Doherty, Regional Water Board staff. I just wanted to let everybody know that we are going to be this year posting on our website the 2007-2008 report, as well as any data that the county, city, or water agency give us that they would like to have posted as well. So we'll make it available to the public from our website as well.
And I believe, too, the MS4 permit, as we know, is coming and to be amended. Haven't seen that, but it's to be amended in the near future and re-up. So how that changes, I don't know yet. But, again, I think it's great you guys do this, and I really commend you on getting people out there and getting active and getting in tune with your watershed.
Well,
so
good secret, job. The secret to recruiting is people don't realize how fun it is to be out in that first rain in the dark.
It's like
believe it or not, people take it on as almost like a spy mission. But it's a very different experience than your everyday life. One quick comment about the MS board. One thing we did in the beginning was look at their sampling points. One thing we try and do is not duplicate data points. There's just no value in that with the limited resources we and the cities like Santa Rosa have. So we're cognizant of where they're sampling and what their criteria is, so where they're not doubling up, so that we're producing a larger amount of data.
Yeah, right now there's two, C1 and C2 is the actual stormwater sample locations with auto samplers. It's done with auto samplers. It's a time weighted composite over 3 hours. And if you look at data, data has been somewhat winnowed down over time simply because, like in metals, you guys do metals, the metals criteria, phenols, volatiles, semi-volatiles, and that kind of stuff were taken out and winnowed out because we just didn't see it. It wasn't there. And I think that was just simply a factor of dilution. But there's some good data out there. I think your data is really important, too. So, again, I think good job.
Yeah, there's actually some things on special projects we sample for gasoline range and diesel range, hydrocarbons, and really didn't see a problem.
Yeah.
And, quickly dispatched that. What we're focused on is metals, nutrient, basic physicals, temperature, pH, and conductivity, and then also bacteria. I mean, those are the most common stormwater pollutants, and that's where we're putting our effort.
Yeah, thank you.
So, again, in your presentation, you mentioned comparing 2008 data back to 2002. How easy is that, and how good is that?
we haven't done it. We would like to be able to do it. We barely are able to scrabble together a report. Pretty much by the time the report comes around, neither of us have any funding, so we're doing it in our spare time. So we have not done that analysis, and that's one of the things that we would like to be able to see so that we can start looking at the trend analysis over time and being able to compare that data.
And is it an apples-to-apples type thing, or is it?
You must have seen our data. One of the problems with using donated labs is over time, different, say, orthophosphate, we traditionally used a certain method, an EPA method, at one lab, and last year we couldn't get that lab to do it, or they were doing our metals instead, and so we sent it to EPA, who used a different method. So often the data is not apples to apples. We do have enough data that use the similar analysis or the same method at the same locations. We're not going to get our 28 stations all to line up, but our hope is that we're going to have 5 or 6 data points where we can look at the data from 2002 to 2008 and establish some trends. But you must have peaked because it's not always apples to apples.
Okay. Just in your 2007 report on page 15, you want to look at the header because it says 2008.
We actually caught that, but not before we sent it to you. But thank you.
Mr. Chairman, permission to be blunt and one last comment, if you don't mind.
Yeah.
Oh, gosh.
Well, I just wanted to underscore that this is damn hard to do, and what we're talking about here is sort of like the water quality equivalent of launching the space shuttle, because you're marshaling a battalion. You everything needs to be lined up. The perfect storm has to roll by, and then everybody has to be trained, willing, and able to do it. So you must feel like Eisenhower on June 3rd saying, do we go, do we push the button or not, and the stress that goes with doing that. Anyway, that was my point, because it is, we've all been, you know, sort of complimentary of the effort. Well, it's a damn big thing. And thank you. But for those of us that have done it and being stressed out over it, it's really...
So is it really fun at 4 in the morning?
No. No. It is a life-changing experience.
It's once
really
only.
In the morning because the rest of it's over.
Yeah. No, it's definitely a chance to step out of your ordinary routine.
All right. If anyone wants to make public comment.
Brenda Edelman, I just want to congratulate them for doing this study. I think it's very important work, and I hope that they'll be able to do some further work on pulling together all the information. I don't know if I'm reading this wrong or what, but on some of the charts, I'm wondering if the arrows are going in the wrong direction. But I'm not sure if I'm reading it correctly. And there was one, I think it was where the standard, now I had it and now I lost it. Water quality objective, say for the E. coli, and maybe there's something I don't know, but it says greater than 235 for the objective. Should that be less than?
Do you mind if we hire you?
I think I saw a few more, but that's just an example. I mean, most of them were fine, but I just wanted to mention that in case it was an error.
Given the negative budget status of the report preparers at the time, we'll let it slide.
All right. With that, we're going to
adjourn
with in the morning. We're going to start with Fort Bragg and whatever the other...
City of Santa Rosa.
Eureka.
Yeah, that one. The one on north.
Up
sorry.
North. That, to accommodate them before the timber and be done. So with that, I just try to give you a heads up. And we will be here at 8:30 in the morning.
Yes.
So we're adjourned for now. Most of us.
Most of you.